Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to Refuah Shlema, a complete recovery, for Malka Bat Simcha, and to elevating the souls of Simcha Chazdai, Pesach Vansir, Ruven Hoffman, Bari Hoffman, Harab Meir Kahana, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, I want to speak about a subject that is familiar to JTFers, but we've never really done a program outlining the statistics that I'm about to give you. I'm about to give you demographic statistics on the future of the United States of America for two reasons. First of all, to tell our Jewish listeners, Jewish JTFers, you need to live in Israel to make Aliyah. There is no future for the Jews in America. Eventually, they're going to turn on you. We're going to explain to you why the statistics are rigged and why you're going to see America turn into a third world banana republic with the worst anti-Semites controlling the United States. That's coming. That's something that is coming. And we're going to explain to you the statistics. And it's something that you have to be blind not to see. We don't have a lot of time left in the United States before it comes. So Jews should be preparing to go on Aliyah, to move to Israel. And unfortunately for our Gentile JTFers, the last hope we have, the last slim hope we have of turning things around, of saving America, would be next year's presidential election. But the odds are against us, and we're going to explain that as well. First, let's understand what we're facing here and why the United States is on the road to self-destruction very, very quickly, and why it doesn't look very good. The prognosis for America's future seems to be very grim, unless somehow the American people wake up, unless we're somehow able to wake the American people up in time. The United States, demographically, has the following racial breakdown. And before I give you the racial breakdown, I want to make clear, JTF is not a racist organization, by any means. It really isn't. JTF believes in the Torah Jewish view. God created all the races. God loves good people in all races and righteous people in all races. There are good people and righteous people in all races. There are evil people and despicable people that should be hated in all races. So it's not because one race is better than the other because of the color of their skin. It's because we're talking about a cultural phenomenon here where certain racial groups and certain ethnic groups and certain demographic groups have a culture from the third world, which is different from the culture of the United States, which is a culture that is anti-white, anti-American, anti-Semitic, a culture of violence, of hatred, of jealousy, of lack of accomplishment and lack of a will to accomplish great things. So the culture that we're talking about that's taking over the United States is a culture that is very negative, and it's not because of the color of anyone's skin. It's not because of that. It's because people, through their own free will, whether they're black or white or brown or red or yellow, doesn't make a difference. People all have free will. All of us are human beings. We're all created in God's image. We all have free will. We could all choose to do good and we could all choose to do bad. But unfortunately, there are certain ethnic groups and there are certain racial groups that repeatedly have chosen to do bad. And the end result is that when they take over the United States, the United States is finished. The United States is finished, and the Jews in America are really in danger when that happens. America is currently 62% white Anglo. Now, America was about 88% white Anglo when I was a little boy in the early 60s. America was 88% white Anglo. Today, America is only 62% white Anglo. White Anglo means white, non-Hispanic, non-Latino, because many Hispanics and Latinos define themselves as white. So these are white Anglos. In other words, these are non-Hispanic whites. 62% of the population in America, and it's shrinking very fast. That majority is shrinking very fast. 18% of America's population is Hispanic. 13% is black. 5% Asian, and 2% mixed races. Now, 18% and 13% and 5% and 2%. The Hispanics, the blacks, the Asians, the mixed races, that makes up 38%. You add that all up, that's 38% of the population. So nearly 4 out of every 10 Americans now are non-white, are not part of the white European culture that made the United States what it is. And again, this is not because of the color of someone's skin. It's because of a cultural phenomenon that exists where certain third world cultures are completely different. And if people prefer that third world culture, if they think that's good, then you'll be very happy because that's the future of the United States. Hillary Clinton, who is the overwhelming favorite to win the Democrat presidential nomination next year, and who is even the favorite to win in the November election, to win the general election. She is the favorite to become the next president of the United States. And sometime maybe when we have more time, we don't have time on this program, but sometime when we have more time, we'll explain to you how through the Electoral College, you need 270 Electoral College votes to win, and how she has an enormous advantage in the Electoral College. But anyway, she is the favorite to win. She's not guaranteed victory, but she's the favorite to win. The odds are in her favor. And she, this past week, said that she's not satisfied with Barack Hussein Obama's amnesty executive order. She's going to issue executive orders granting amnesty and citizenship to all 20 million illegal aliens in this country. 20 million illegal aliens will become citizens if she becomes president of the United States. She will issue the executive order. And of course, if those 20 million become citizens and we have open borders and an end to deportation, and we'll have a massive new immigration, because then people from all over the third world are going to come flooding in. They're going to say, wow, look at this. You come to the United States illegally and you're granted citizenship. Look how easy it is. Tens of millions will come across the border if that happens. You'll have a huge new illegal immigration into the United States, open borders, and the people who are coming here are younger than the white population, than the white Anglo population, and have a much higher birth rate than the white Anglo population. The majority of babies born every year in the United States are non-white. Most babies born in the United States every year now are non-white. So the white population, even if not a single new illegal alien came here, or legal alien came here, even if no one new came here, the United States would still see a shrinking white Anglo population just because of the high birth rate of the non-white groups. So because of the huge birth rate, and because of the mass new immigration that Hillary Clinton's executive order will encourage, and because of the open borders that she will be encouraging, and because of this massive amnesty and citizenship for 20 million illegal aliens who are already in the United States, you will almost overnight see a transformation of the United States very, very quickly into a third world banana republic, and it'll be irreversible. You won't be able to save the country anymore. That's why next year really is, in my view, the last chance to save America. And let's remember, it may already be too late. We may already have passed the tipping point. It may be too late already. Just look at the past two presidential elections in 2008. And in 2012, Barack Hussein Obama won majorities. So there's already a majority of the American people that are willing to vote for someone like Barack Hussein Obama, for a black Muslim America hater, Jew hater. He already got a majority of the vote twice. So America's already majority left in their voting patterns when it comes to the race for president, when it comes to presidential elections. Can you imagine if it's already majority left and a majority already voted for Obama twice? Can you imagine if, in addition to that, we have another 20 million illegal aliens who are given citizenship and open borders and the high birth rate? Add all of that to the majority, and it becomes an overwhelming majority. And so what happens? What happens to the United States? Well, at that point, the whole United States becomes like California. California, in the 1960s, 1970s, and 1980s, was a conservative Republican state. The majority of voters were not registered Republican, but even Democrats, many millions of Democrats in California voted Republican, voted for Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan ran for governor in 1966 and in 1970, won overwhelmingly, twice was elected governor of California, overwhelmingly. And then he ran for president twice in California, 1980 and in 1984, won overwhelmingly. In the last election that he ran in 1984, Ronald Reagan got 58% of the vote in California. So California was still with a solid majority voting for someone whom they perceived to be conservative. Look at what has happened since then. That was 1984. Okay, about 30 years have passed since then, and look at the transformation of California, and it's because of demographics. California is now about 60% non-white. 60% of California's population now is non-white. And so the end result is a state that was conservative, that was a conservative Republican state, has now been transformed into one of the most left-wing states in America, a state that votes like New York or Massachusetts, a state that is, again, among the most left-wing, hopelessly left-wing Democrat states in the country, where a true conservative, a true Republican, has no chance of even coming close to winning. That's what California has been made into, a hopeless socialist basket case. That's what New York is, that's what Massachusetts is, that's what many of the states, Illinois, many of the states in the United States are already like that, already in that category. But the one thing that saves America is you still have most of the South, the Midwest, and other states that still vote Republican, that still elect Republican governors and Republican state legislators, and you have a Republican majority in both houses of Congress because of that. So you still have enough people out there in middle America that have not yet become like New York or California. But that's changing because of demographics. For instance, one of the most conservative states in America is Texas. Texas consistently votes Republican and is a conservative state. It's a state that overwhelmingly elected our favorite senator, Ted Cruz, to the Senate. But look at Texas demographics. Texas demographics are quickly going the way of California. Did you know that Texas is now majority non-white? Whites are a minority in the state of Texas. The reason Texas still votes conservative is because the non-whites, many of the Hispanic and Asian non-whites that are there, are not citizens. Many of them are illegal aliens, or some of them just have green cards and haven't become citizens yet. But once they attain citizenship, and Hillary Clinton plans to give them citizenship overnight, once they attain citizenship, Texas will become a left-wing state, just like California, New York, Massachusetts. And that'll happen to many other places in the United States until the whole United States, the United States as a whole, becomes like New York or becomes like California. In other words, a hopeless bastion of socialism, just like a European country that has become socialist, except European countries are still majority white. So in European countries, if they ever wake up, there's still some chance they could turn it around. But in the United States, there'll be no chance of that. Because the ethnic groups and the demographic groups and the racial groups that are taking over the United States are groups that want government assistance and government intrusion and government affirmative action and welfare and food stamps and public housing. These are groups that want to balkanize America. They don't believe in the English language. They don't believe in the United States. Their hearts and souls are still in the countries they came from. And so you have a situation here where all of America will become like the nightmare of New York City, for instance. New York City now, who's the mayor of New York City? Bill de Blasio. His wife is a black lesbian, an admitted black lesbian, who announced she was a lesbian in 1979. His son wears the Black Panther hairdo, and because he put his son with the Black Panther hairdo on television commercials, and because of his black lesbian wife, he was elected by a landslide as mayor of New York. He got, I think, 73-74% of the vote because of that. New Yorkers thought that was wonderful when they saw that. They love the Black Panther afro, and they love Bill de Blasio saying he's a socialist. So can you imagine if the whole United States becomes like that? What will happen to the country? And as far as Jews are concerned, the Jews, even though the Jews in most cases also vote for these evil left-wing candidates, the Jews are going to be voting, as they often have done in history, to cut their own throats. Because these leftists, these groups that the Jews have been fighting for, despise them, hate them, envy them, and want to kill them, literally want to kill the Jews. These are the ones who support, I mean, the people the Jews support Louis Farrakhan, support the worst anti-Semitism, the worst envy of Jews, support the Arabs, support the Muslims, support the destruction of Israel, and support, and of course, support anti-Semitic attacks on Jews in the United States. So Jews in America will be in grave danger. Israel can forget about any hope of getting any friendship with the United States anymore once these people take over. I mean, Obama's policies, the hateful policies of Obama and Clinton and Kerry, that forever will be America's policy. And that also, by the way, proves that we're right when we say Israel has to go independent, that Israel cannot rely on the United States of foreign aid and should become independent. But in any event, this is the future. Now, next year, if Hillary Clinton is defeated, even if she's defeated, let's say you get a Republican. You don't think under Republican you're still going to have a higher birth rate for these other groups? You're still going to have people coming here illegally? You're still going to, you think a Republican is going to deport all the illegal aliens? No. Even Ted Cruz won't do that. So you still have these bad trend lines, even with a Republican. Even if Ted Cruz became president, he's the best of the ones running. He's the best. It'll only slow things down. It'll only slow things down, which you could say could give people a chance to wake up, and maybe there's some chance for a miracle. So it's, you know, better to vote for it to come slower rather than faster. But it'll only slow things down. Next year is the last chance to stop all this from happening, literally almost overnight. If Hillary Clinton becomes president, it's over. I don't see how the United States continues as a viable country rather than becoming a socialist basket case. It is really, really, it seems to me like a virtually hopeless proposition, unless we win the presidential election next year, unless someone like Ted Cruz gets elected. And even if he gets elected, even then, there are bad trend lines, but at least then it's putting it off more into the future, and there's a little bit more breathing space, a little bit more time to try to wake people up. So that's the situation we face. That's why Jews should not just ignore us when we say that every Jew belongs in Israel. God wants the Jewish people to be in Israel. Every Jew belongs in Israel, and the future is in Israel. The future is not here. And that's why we speak about the urgency of this upcoming election. It is an election with great urgency. And you see the damage that a United States government that's hostile to Israel can do. You see that they can nuclearize all the Muslim countries surrounding Israel. I mean, it's a very dangerous situation. So we're trying to deal with it. Of course, we want to wake the people of Israel up. The people of Israel would wake up, then we would be able to cope with the situation if we had a real Israeli government for a change, a real Jewish government for a change. And of course, here in the United States, we're trying to wake the American people up, because America's survival is definitely in grave jeopardy. And I hope all these statistics make it clear to you why we're saying that, and just how bad the situation looks. Unless, by some miracle, Ted Cruz gets elected, or you get a real conservative Republican in there, and I think Ted Cruz is the only real conservative running, to tell you the truth. Unless that happens, I think America's days are numbered, and I think the end is coming a lot faster than people realize. So, we need Jews to understand that they need to make Aliyah. And we need everybody to understand that anyone who loves America should be very concerned about what's coming very fast, and why the election next year is probably the most important election in American history. It's probably the last chance America has to survive. We're going to try our best to influence the course of events, both in Israel and the United States. And you know we don't compromise, and you know we face reality. And so we ask you to do the following things. If we all work together as a team, maybe we can have an impact. Maybe we can have an impact to try to turn things around, to try to make things better. We ask you to do the following for us. First of all, we need your prayers. Please pray for our success. This is such a critical time. Please pray for our success. Secondly, when we put up English and Hebrew videos, please promote those videos and publicize those videos everywhere, on Facebook, on YouTube, everywhere possible. Third, join and participate and comment on the JTF.org English main page. If you speak Hebrew, or you know people speak Hebrew, on the Hayamin.org Hebrew main page, go to our main pages. The English main page is JTF.org. The Hebrew main page is Hayamin.org. The Shlomo updates our main page all the time. There are new articles, very important news stories there. Every single day you should go there and check out what's on that page. It's very much worth reading. It's the most valuable news page you can go to on the internet. Make comments, get involved, make sure you go there and spread the word about the news page. So far we said prayer is number one. Second, helping us promote English and Hebrew videos. Third, joining and participating and commenting on our great news page. And fourth, last but not least, every check, every money order, every cash donation to JTF makes a big difference. It does help us. Obviously, the more money we have, the more people we can reach, the stronger we get, the more successful we can be. And I don't think anyone who is sane will doubt that this is such a critical time. It is a very critical time for us. So every check, every money order, every cash donation sent to our post office box, it does make a difference. This is a critical time for us. And if you prefer to do it online because you feel it's more convenient to do it online with your credit card, that's fine. There's no difference to us. You just go to the donate button on hayamin.org. On the Hebrew main page, on top, there's a donate button in English. Click on the donate button, and in a couple of minutes, you can very conveniently donate with your credit card. So whether you want to send it through the regular mail or whether you want to do it with your credit card online, please help us. It does make a difference. Nothing is ever completely hopeless because there is a God, and God can do miraculous things. So I'm hoping we can make a difference, and Israel will never be destroyed completely. Israel will never face complete destruction. Now, the third time that we come, it's forever. So just remember, in the end, the good guys are going to win. But think of the terrible tragedies. Think of everything we discussed in this opening on the program this week, and think of the terrible, tragic suffering that will yet come before the final redemption, before the good guys win. Think of all the terrible suffering that we're going to see unless people wake up. It's our obligation to try to wake people up. We're not allowed to be silent. If we act now, maybe we still have a shot at getting a president who's going to secure the border, who's not going to grant amnesty, and who's going to adopt policies toward Israel that will make God perhaps want to wake the American people up, because God blesses those who bless Israel. So the things we're talking about are the only chance for saving America. And of course, we want to save Israel from terrible tragedy as well. Israel won't be destroyed completely, but God forbid terrible things could happen. Large numbers of Jews in Israel, very large numbers, could be murdered, God forbid. Terrible things could happen. So we've got to act, and we've got to act now. And every one of us has an obligation to stand up and do everything we can as a team to make a difference. Okay, now let's go to our questions from our great JTFers. And we start out with Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, compare American Prune Face and Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Okay, American Prune Face is Joe Lieberman and Debbie Wasserman Schultz. These are two self-hating Jews. Debbie Wasserman Schultz is the head of the Democrat National Committee, the same Democrat party that boos when you mention Israel at the Democrat convention, that supports Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson and Farrakhan and all the most vicious anti-Semites. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz and all the self-hating Jews love the Democrat Party. And she's the head of the Democrat Party and loyally, slavishly defends Obama and Hillary Clinton and all the other Jew haters. Joe Lieberman is the guy who defended Arafat, said that Arafat is his friend, that he wants to go back to the pre-67 borders. He supported the Clinton plan to force Israel back to the pre-1967 borders and get Israel to even surrender Jerusalem, her capital city. That's what he supported in 2000 when he was the Democrat running mate for vice president, when he was Al Gore's running mate for vice president. He said that if he's elected, the first thing he's going to do is invite Louis Farrakhan to the White House. He said that he admires and respects Louis Farrakhan, the black Hitler, the black Hitler who has praised Hitler and has said that Hitler was a great man. That's who Joe Lieberman wants to invite to the White House. So these are just two examples of the typical sicknesses that we find in among Jewish politicians and why you should never vote for the Jewish politician. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, tell us a self-hating Jewish action story. A self-hating Jewish action story. Well, why don't we speak about Jonathan Pollard? Jonathan Pollard is a Jew who put his life on the line to try to save Israel from catastrophe. He passed over to Israel information that under American-Israeli agreements, Israel was supposed to receive anyway. And what he did was actually beneficial to the United States and to Israel. He's an American hero and he's a Jewish hero. He was double-crossed. He was given this black Jew-hating judge, Yimach Shmo, who sentenced him to life in prison. Gave him a life sentence, even though he was promised that wouldn't happen. He was betrayed by everybody. And then he goes to appeal his case to the U.S. Court of Appeals in the District of Columbia. This was in Washington, D.C. And he gets when you're appealing your case, you have what's called U.S. District Court. That's where you're sentenced in federal court. The federal judge sentences you. And then when you appeal, if you're appealing, and his appeal was rock solid. I mean, there was no question they double-crossed him and betrayed. They violated all their agreements with him. He goes in front of the three-judge panel on the Court of Appeals. One of the judges, Judge Stevens, is a Gentile, and the other two judges, Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Lauren Silberman, are Jews. Now, listen to this story, and you'll see why we say we wish it was illegal for Jews to be judges, illegal for Jews to be in politics. Look at what these Jews do when they get power in the United States. Look at what they do to their own people. The two Jewish judges, Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Lauren Silberman, ruled against Pollard on a technicality, even though they admitted that he was wronged. And they admitted that he got a life sentence which he should never have gotten. But on a technicality, they ruled against him. Can you imagine them ruling on a technicality to give a black man a life sentence? If it was a black guy or an Arab or a Muslim, you imagine them doing that to a black or an Arab or a Muslim? These two self-hating Judenrat Jew animals, Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Lauren Silberman, Yimach Shmam V'Zichram, ruled against Pollard on the technical that he didn't file it exactly in time. Something so absurd that would never be accepted in any other situation. They ruled against him, two out of the three, the two Jews. Judge Stevens, the Gentile, ruled in his favor. Judge Stevens said this is a gross miscarriage of justice, a gross miscarriage of justice. The Gentile judge rules in Pollard's favor and says it's a gross miscarriage of justice. And the two Jews rule against him and say, no, go to jail for life because you tried to help Israel. That's what happens when we have Jewish judges and Jewish politicians in America. That's the type of scum that we're dealing with. Now, Lewinsky Stinks writes, and I quote, discuss the great Jew Yusuf al-Khattab, unquote. Yusuf al-Khattab was Joseph Leonard Cohen, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro. And he supported, of course, Al-Qaeda and supported the Muslim terrorists. He converted to Islam, supported the Muslim terrorists, this Jew from Queens, by the way, a Jew from Queens, supported the Muslim terrorists, and he attacked JTF and attacked me personally on his site. I don't know if you remember, but he was attacking me and JTF and made YouTube videos against me and against JTF. He attacked us, Joseph Leonard Cohen. Yusuf al-Khattab. What a piece of filth. Anyway, he was finally convicted. I don't remember how much time he got. He was sentenced for his involvement in inciting Islamic terrorism and engaging in other illegal activity. I don't remember what he got, but, what a vile. Can you imagine what a vile individual? And Lewinsky Stinks now writes, what's worse, deformed Judaism, quote unquote, or Islam? Thank you. Deformed Judaism, of course, is worse because it's a distortion of the truth, of the true religion of God. That's much worse. Islam we know is a lie. Islam we know is a false religion. But Judaism that was handed down to the Jewish people at Mount Sinai, that's by God, distorting that, that's the worst thing you can do. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. We go now to Wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, "Does Seth Rogen deserve to be cursed? Please give him a traditional Chaim blessing," unquote. Well, he definitely acts like a self-hating Jew. He's not gay, but he did sexual poses for a gay group. The reason I'm saying he's not gay, because he's married, and I don't think he's gay. But he agreed to do sexual poses for a gay group. I mean, how sick is that? He's also an open pot smoker and fights to legalize pot. So he not only does he destroy his brain cells and use this very damaging drug, but he encourages others to do it. And encouraging others to do evil is the worst thing a person can do, to bring others down and drag others down. That's the worst thing you can do. His movies and his TV shows are all immoral. So he's definitely a bad influence. I don't want to curse him. I don't know if I want to curse him. He's certainly very bad influence, not a good person, and has done some bad things. But it's a pretty high. You got to go pretty far in doing a lot of terrible things for me to curse somebody. Based on what I just told you, he probably does deserve it, but I'm gonna be cautious here and not actually curse him, even though I will say that his influence is uniformly bad and his lifestyle is bad, and he better change fast. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. And we go now to Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, what do you think of the riots in Baltimore? Also, can you curse the DA there for charging 6 cops with murder? Thanks," unquote. The riots in Baltimore, what an outrage. You know, it's funny, black people, when they decide they want to protest something, they burn their own neighborhoods down. You notice that? They always burn and destroy their own neighborhoods and attack their own people and victimize their own people. Most black criminals attack other blacks. Most black rapists rape black women. Most black murderers kill other blacks. What stupid people. And, you know, here they are, 6 cops. 3 of the 6 cops are black. They were racist. They decided to kill this guy. And they decided to murder this guy, and they're racist, and they were charged with murder, by the way. Murder they were charged with. What a farce. And 3 out of the 6 are black. What a farce. And by the way, the ones who were supposedly brutal toward him were the black ones. Of course, this DA, Yimach Shmav Azechra Hashem Reshaim Yerkav, deserves to be cursed. She's an evil beast, and she's part of the mob. And that's the future of America. Unless Americans wake up, the future of America will be one big mob. This whole country will become like one big mob. And Jews better wake up and understand they're going to be the first victims of that mob. Thank you, Joe Gutfeld. We go now to Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, "Discuss each individual in detail. 1, Dick Cheney." Well, of course, he was vice president of the United States for 8 years. And I don't know. I don't think he wanted to pressure Israel to give up land, even though he claimed to be in favor of it. But I don't think his actual policies were pressuring Israel. I don't think that was his main concern. I think his policies toward Iraq were terrible. I think he should have, instead of Iraq, the United States should have gone after Iran and its nuclear program. So I think he did a lot of bad things, a lot of stupid things. What else can I say? I think his policies were dumb, were just dumb. He got the United States into wars that were in the wrong place with the wrong target. Binyamin now writes to Donald Rumsfeld, same as Dick Cheney, same thing. He actually said at one point that he didn't think Israel should have to give up any land, Donald Rumsfeld. He was the defense secretary in the Bush administration. He actually said that at one point. So I don't think he was an evil person or a really terrible person, but his policies were also very dumb. Going after Saddam Hussein and going after Iraq instead of going after the Iranian nuclear program? I mean, come on, what is more dangerous? How stupid. And I could have told Cheney and Rumsfeld that Saddam Hussein didn't have weapons of mass destruction. In fact, we did say that. We did video, we did program saying that they don't have weapons of mass destruction at the time. We knew it and they didn't know it. So policies that were dumb. Binyamin now writes 3, Robert Gates. Now, Robert Gates, he was defense secretary for Bush and Obama. He was a vicious Jew hater. He's an evil person, Robert Gates. He is always demanding Israeli suicide, always condemning Israel, always condemning everything Israel does and saying Israel's not doing enough for the so-called peace process, which means going back to the pre-67 suicide borders. He is a vicious Jew hater, Robert Gates. 4, Leon Panetta, another vicious Jew hater. He was CIA director and defense secretary under Obama. Like Gates, relentlessly pressured Israel not to destroy Iran's nuclear program, for instance, constantly pressuring Israel, telling Israel you shouldn't touch Iran's nuclear program, obsessively trying to protect Iran's nuclear program from an Israeli attack. Why would it bother an American Secretary of Defense or any loyal American if Israel destroyed Iran's nuclear program? Iran says death to America and is building nuclear bombs and promises to use them against America. And if Israel destroyed that program, that's something that American officials would be against? You know, obviously, these people are traitors to the United States as well. And Leon Panetta, of course, now he's active with Hillary Clinton, running her campaign. 5, Ashton Carter. He's Obama's current defense secretary, and he speaks about the need to contain a nuclear Iran. In other words, he's actually written about Iran going nuclear and saying we have to accept it and contain a nuclear Iran. So you see what he's all about. 6, George Tenet. George Tenet was the CIA director under Bill Clinton and under George W. Bush. He's a moron. He said that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction and pushed that line very, very hard, insisting that Iraq does have weapons of mass destruction. He called it a slam dunk. He said there's no question that they have it. He's also a vicious Jew hater, constantly attacked Israel. When Bill Clinton pretended that he was going to release Jonathan Pollard, lied to Netanyahu and said he would release Jonathan Pollard if Israel gives up 13% of Judea and Samaria. Israel, of course, agreed to give up the land, and Bill Clinton then said he's not going to free Pollard. You know, typical. I mean, and of course, that didn't stop Israel from continuing to give. You know, Israel should say, "Oh, screw you." You know, you know. But of course, that never happens. And of course, Israel should never agree to give up any land for any reason, even to free Pollard. But when he said that he would free Pollard, when Bill Clinton announced that he would be willing to consider freeing Pollard, this animal, George Tenet, was such a Jew hater, he said he would resign. He said he will resign if Pollard is released. He threatened Clinton. Not that Clinton genuinely intended to free Pollard, but he said he would resign if Clinton did free Pollard. And Sandy Berger, this is another example of what happens. Jews get to high places. Sandy Berger was Bill Clinton's national security advisor. This self-hating Jew was caught stealing 9/11 classified documents. There were classified documents regarding 9/11, the 9/11 attacks, and he stole them. He was putting them in his socks, in his underwear. He was stealing them. He went to look at them, supposedly to view the paperwork, and he wanted to steal the documents. And he got caught, red-handed. He got caught. And the reason he wanted to do it is because he wanted to cover up the Clinton role in leaving America open to the 9/11 attack. Because he, when he was National Security Advisor and Bill Clinton, pursued policies that made America vulnerable, that they knew this attack was coming. They knew an attack was coming. They knew America was vulnerable. And they pursued policies that made them guilty. And so he wanted to cover that up. And so, because they knew about Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden and the threat to take down the World Trade Center again. They knew all that, and, you know, they knew about the danger of the Saudi connection to terrorism. He wanted to cover all that up, so he was stealing the documents, and he got caught. And he actually pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor when he got caught. He was arrested, and he pleaded guilty. They only charged him with a misdemeanor and sentenced him to 2 years probation and a $50,000 fine. Can you believe this? He's the one who should have gotten life in prison, this traitor. He's the one who should have gotten what Pollard got, this filthy pig. And finally, of course, you know, Sandy Berger also worked on the 2000 Camp David summit. Do you remember the 2000 Camp David summit when Bill Clinton brought together Ehud Barak, and Yasser Arafat and tried to get Israel to go back to the pre-67 borders, but Arafat, thank God, miraculously was dumb enough to reject the Israeli offer. You remember that? That was Bill Clinton trying to get Israel to give away Jerusalem, give away the Golan Heights, give away Judea and Samaria. The Golan, he had a summit with the Syrians to, also to give away at Camp David to give away, to have Israel give away the Golan Heights. All of that was under the Clinton administration. Sandy Berger was involved with all of that. Yimach shmo v'zechro, shem reshaim yirkav. May his name and memory be obliterated. Thank you, Binyamin. We go now to Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, Kyle Kulinski, white leftish radio host, praises Malcolm X, justifies black riots, advocates for fag marriage, quote-unquote, attacks Bible as violent. Okay. I don't know anything about this guy, but the way you describe him, he certainly is... he's the scum of the earth. And Anna Baltzer, Yimach Mava Zechra, this Judenrat Kapo Jew, she's dedicated to Israel's destruction. That's her whole life. She's a Jew who works to destroy Israel. She says the Jew-hating news media is biased toward Israel. She said they're not reporting on what she calls the Palestinian, the plight of the Palestinians. She says they're biased toward Israel. The Jew-hating media... Can you believe this? The Jew-hating media that works day and night to destroy Israel. Yimach shma v'zichra shem reshaim yirkav. May her name and memory be obliterated. May the name of the wicked rot. Thank you, Smash Islam. Chicago Jew now writes, despite your differences with Pam Geller, can you please comment on the tragic shooting that took place at an event she sponsored in Garland, Texas, unquote. Well, of course, it was an outrage. They had a Mohammed cartoon drawing contest. What? They're not allowed to draw a cartoon of Mohammed. Can you believe this? And, all of a sudden, all the leftists who say that it's art and we must defend the First Amendment when it's an attack on Judaism, when it's an attack on Christianity, all of a sudden you have to. This is art. What's wrong with you? You fascist. Then it's art, and then they all defend it. But if you draw a picture of Muhammad, all the leftists who are against every other religion, the one religion they defend is Islam. And these two Muslim terrorists, one was a black Muslim from America, and the other was an Arab Muslim. They went there to murder people. Thank you, Chicago Jew. We go now to Kahana Was Right, BT, who writes, and I quote, Dear Chaim, is Obama to blame for ISIS, or no matter who is president, due to Islam, it's inevitable groups like this will sprout and gain power, unquote. No, Obama is not to blame. Of course, these groups will gain power as long as there are Muslims in the world. You're going to have this, of course. So Obama didn't create this. But Obama is responsible for enabling. Obama and Netanyahu are responsible for enabling Iran, for instance, to gain nuclear bombs, which is much worse than ISIS or the Islamic State. Much more dangerous. Iran going nuclear is 1,000 times more dangerous than the Islamic State. 1,000 times more dangerous. And that, Obama and Netanyahu and the governments of the United States and Israel and the governments of the world are responsible for. Because that can be stopped. Thank you, Kahana Was Right. We go now to Kalman ben Menachem, who writes, and I quote, Reb Chaim, can you teach us about Bohdan Khmelnytsky and the pogroms of the 1650s? Thank you. Yes, this is something that you never hear about. Nobody ever speaks about it. 250,000 Jews, 250,000 Jews were slaughtered in the most brutal way imaginable by the Khmelnytsky, I'm not very good when it comes to pronouncing Ukrainian or Slavic names, but Khmelnytsky and his followers, who were Ukrainian Cossack Nazis, they massacred 250,000 Jews. 250,000 Jews several hundred years ago. Do you ever hear about this? The Ukrainian Cossack Nazis did this. The Cossacks in Russia. And to this day, Khmelnytsky, this Ukrainian Cossack Hitler, is praised as a hero by the Ukrainians. They named a town and a village. They named a village after him. He's called the father of the Ukraine. He slaughtered 250,000 Jews, cut pregnant women to pieces, murdered and slaughtered little babies, little Jewish children. He's praised as a hero by the Ukrainians and by the Russians, because then he signed a pact with Russia and signed an agreement with Russia. So the Russians also praise him now. So the Russians and the Ukrainians praise this piece of filth, this Slavic Hitler. Just shows you what we're dealing with when we talk about the Ukraine and when we talk about Russia. Shows you what you're dealing with. Thank you, Kalman. And we go now to the great Mensch, who writes, and I quote, U.S. sent to Nepal 54 rescuers, France 11, Germany 52, Israel sent 250 and field hospital. Why? World critics, aid for Nepalese, none for Palestinians. Sick. Mensch, you make some very good points. And this is an excellent point you're making. Little Israel sends 250 rescuers. The United States, the giant United States, sent only 54. Little Israel had to send five times as many. And then the world condemns Israel for doing it. No matter what Israel does, the world condemns Israel. It really is very sick. It is very, very sick. Great point, Mensch. And we go now to Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, one, thoughts on John Bolton. He was in Great Trek last week, unquote. John Bolton is good on the issue of Iran. He was UN ambassador to the United States, ambassador to the UN under Bush. On the issue of Iran, he's good. He has urged Israel to destroy militarily Iran's program, so he's good on that issue. But on other issues, he's terrible. He supports gay marriage. On other issues, he's terrible. You know, I'm picky. I want somebody who's good on all the issues. Ted Cruz is good on Iran, and Ted Cruz is also good on gay marriage. He's against it. So I want someone who's good on all the issues. But on Iran, he's good. John Bolton also supports a so-called two-state solution, creation of a so-called Palestine state, but I don't think he would pressure Israel the way Obama would, but still, you know, he's on record of supporting it, which is also bad. So I certainly don't think he's the answer to our problems. I don't think he's the worst person. I think, again, on Iran, he takes a good stand, but he's not the answer to our problems. Three, what is considered a full conversion to Judaism, unquote? A full conversion is when someone goes to a Beit Din, a certified Beit Din. Beit Din is a rabbinic court. And there are three rabbis usually sitting on the Beit Din. And the three rabbis, all of whom are certified to do for gerut, for conversion process. And the person goes through the mikvah. He goes under the mikvah, which is the water. And he goes through the whole process. And it is a process. It's a process. And goes through that entire process and is examined by the rabbis, and they ask him questions, and he promises to observe all the mitzvot of the Torah, all the commandments. He promises to be a religious Jew and faithful to the Jewish people and to the Jewish faith and to the God of Israel. And once he does all of that, that's a full conversion. He gets a certificate. He gets a teudat gerut, it's called, which is certificate of conversion, and that's a full conversion. Dr. Dan now writes, four, thoughts on Pamela Geller, draw Mohammed Yamashmo v'zichro, unquote. Well, it's something that I actually got this question above from, let's see, who asked this question? The question was Chicago Jew. You know, I think that, I think Pamela Geller and anyone else have a right to draw Mohammed and have a right to express themselves. And if the Muslims don't like it, that's too damn bad. And for them to go and try to murder people for expressing themselves, I think the outrage should be against the Muslim terrorists, not against Pamela Geller. Even though, you know, Pamela Geller criticized JTF for no reason. I don't know why she did that. And that turned me off as far as she's concerned, you know, when she did that. I don't know why she decided to attack JTF for no reason a year or two, I think a couple of years ago. But in this instance, she certainly, you know, she has a right to hold any conference she wants and to draw whatever she wants to draw. She has a right to do it. Dr. Dana writes, five, thoughts on Ayelet Shaked being appointed Israel's new justice minister, unquote. Ayelet Shaked is part of Habayit HaYehudi, the Jewish Home Party of Naftali Bennett. They sat in governments that Netanyahu has run for 6 years while Jewish building and Jewish settlements were frozen, anti-Semitic freezing on just Jewish building, and they lied and pretended that they were fighting for the Jews to live in the settlements. They were liars. They're a bluff. They're all one big bluff. I have no confidence in Ayelet Shaked doing what really should be done as justice minister, which is reigning in the Supreme Court and taking away from the Supreme, taking the left out of the Supreme Court. Why should the radical left control all the judges on the court, on a high court in Israel? And I don't believe Ayelet Shaked is going to solve that problem. I think we'll see. I hope I'm proven wrong. God willing, I hope I'm proven wrong. I hope, God willing, I hope she surprises me and they do, they come up with some real reforms. But until I see it, I don't believe it, because everything they've done always has been one big bluff, one big lie, and they've never accomplished anything good for the Jewish people. That's the old Maftal, the old National Religious Party. They are the worst. Just a complete bluff. Thank you, Dr. Dan. And we go to Guns N' Roses fan who writes, and I quote, Chaim, what do you think of the following people? Jen Psaki. Jen Psaki is the Jew-hating moron who is the spokesperson for the Obama-Kerry State Department. And she is she's a moron. She doesn't know the issue. She's not qualified to be a spokesman for the State Department. Secondly, she is a Jew-hater, like her bosses, Obama and Kerry and Hillary Clinton and all the other. I mean, she's a Jew-hater. She supports their policies of getting Israel to commit suicide, and she supports the policies of destroying America, you know, of making America subservient to Sharia and to Islam. So she's anti-American, she's anti-Jewish, and she's a moron. So that's quite a combination. Guns N' Roses fan now asks about John Hagee. John Hagee, I believe, genuinely cares about Israel, but unfortunately he slavishly does whatever the Israeli government does, he supports. I mean, if the Israeli government was going to give away Jerusalem, I think he would say, well, listen, the Israeli government says that you have to do it. That a true friend doesn't let their friend commit suicide. If their friend is doing something crazy which endangers their survival, a true friend speaks up and says, hey, what you're doing is wrong. John Hagee doesn't do that. John Hagee should oppose the creation of a so-called Palestine state. John Hagee should demand that Israel attack Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. John Hagee should oppose Netanyahu's freeze on Jewish building in Judea, Samaria, and Jerusalem. He doesn't do that. So I'm disappointed in him, because I do believe that he genuinely cares about Israel. I think he's a Bible-believing Christian. I think he does care about Israel. But I'm disappointed that he just blindly follows whatever the Israeli government says. And next one that the Guns N' Roses fan asks about is Natan Zehavi. Natan Zehavi is an extreme left radio guy. He has a radio show, and he's also was involved with newspapers. He used to have a column years ago in Yediot Acharonot and in Ma'ariv. And I go way back. I remember when he had a column in a newspaper called Chadashot. I mean, I go way back. You know, because I'm 58 years old, so I remember all these things. He is an extreme leftist, always was an extreme leftist. He admitted that he votes for Meretz. Meretz is the extreme left party, I mean, super left, Marxist, anti-Semitic, anti-Israel party. That's who he votes for. So that's what he represents. He's a bad person. And Guns N' Roses fan now asks about Daniela Weiss. Daniela Weiss is basically a good person, and I have great respect for her commitment to the Jewish communities in Judea and Samaria. But her ties to Netanyahu and her defense of Netanyahu, I think, is very bad. And when she said, even if, all right, he's freezing Jewish building, it's true there's a hakpa'ah, there's a freeze on Jewish building in Judea and Samaria. She said, that's true, but it's still better than the left. Daniela Weiss, I have news for you. That is the left. That's as bad as it gets. So I disagree with what she's been doing the past couple of years. I think she's allowing herself to become a tool for the phony right. And the phony right, in many cases, is worse than the left. And I think I think she's a good person, but I think she's being manipulated. And I don't like what she's been doing the past year or two. Guns N' Roses fan now writes, thank you and may the Lord bless you, Edward. Thank you, Edward. And we now go to Righteous Sword 007. who writes, and I quote, Chaim, do you have any Holocaust survivors in your family? Let's start with that. Yes, certainly, on my father's side. My mother's side, the family are Sephardic Jews. Also on my mother's side, there were people murdered on both sides of my family. On my mother's side, we had Jewish relatives in Greece who were murdered when the Greeks when the Germans occupied Greece. They murdered 90% of Greek Jewry, and we had people on my father's side in Poland who were murdered. Many, many people in my family were murdered during the Holocaust on both sides of my family. And my father, and actually my father and my grandparents actually fled. They fled Nazi-occupied Poland and Nazi-occupied Europe. Righteous Sword now writes, also, what is your judgment of Chaim Rumkowski, unquote. Chaim Rumkowski was the notorious head of the Judenrat in Lodz. Lodz is a large city in Poland and had a large Jewish population. And he was an evil, ruthless beast who worked together with the German Nazis, cooperated fully with them, helped them. A typical Jewish establishment guy. When the German Nazis took over, they appointed him, put him in charge of the Jewish community, and he convinced the Jews to obey the German Nazis and not to rebel, to do what the German Nazis told them. If all the millions of Jews who were murdered rebelled, they certainly would have had a better chance if they all had fought back like the Serbs did, like other people did. They would have a much better chance than just sitting there waiting to be put in gas chambers and ovens, which is what they ended up doing, thanks to people like this Judenrat piece of filth. He was the head of the Judenrat, and he was cruel and evil toward his fellow Jews, but he was so nice and kind and like a lamb to the German Nazis, obedient lamb to the German Nazis, but to his fellow Jews, he was a brutal beast. And if any Jews protested his policies or protested the evil things he did, he would call in the German Nazis to come in and kill any Jews that were giving him a hard time or disagreeing with any Jews would disagree with him. He called in the German Nazis on them, and the German Nazis would come in and kill them. That's what they did in the Lodz ghetto with the cooperation of Chaim Rumkowski. Yimach shmo v'zichro, shem reshaim yirkav. May his name and memory be obliterated. May the name of the wicked rot. By the way, he gave a speech called, an infamous speech called Give Me Your Children in 1942, where he convinced the Jews of the Lodz ghetto to hand over their children to the German Nazis. He said, your children and the elderly have to be handed over. It's the only hope we have for saving whatever we can save. You have to hand over your children. You have to hand over the elderly to be sent to the death camps. You have to make this sacrifice. It was called the Give Me Your Children speech, a notorious speech. What a self-hating serpent, and what a disgrace that most of the Jews listened to him. What a disgrace. I hope we learn our lesson, and I hope we learn to become a people that doesn't behave like this anymore, God forbid. Thank you, Righteous Sword, and we go now to PMN, who writes, and I quote, what's the goal of the UN, unquote. The goal of the UN... The UN serves the governments, the major governments of the world, the United States, Russia, and the other governments, and the General Assembly usually serves the third world countries. The UN originally was formed in order to create a new world order, in order to get the whole world basically under one type of world government rule, where there was one general, and it doesn't necessarily mean actually one government ruling over everything immediately, but where there was an international, what they call the international community, which basically dictates to everyone else what the rules are in the world. The UN is very evil, a very evil institution, and very dangerous to the sovereignty of the United States, the sovereignty of Israel, to the sovereignty of all nations. Very evil organization. And PMN writes, should Israel leave, what will be the consequences? Israel should leave unless we take over. If we take over, then I would have an ambassador there just to go there and insult them and really tell them off. If my ambassador would really tell them off, I would send an ambassador there that they'd wind up throwing us out. Because I would send an ambassador there who would expose them day and night and blast away at them and show what they're really all about. But if we're not in power, It's not good to have them there, because any other ambassador that these wimpy governments in Israel will send will just be we'll just be bowing down to them. So yes, Israel should leave unless we take power. If we take power, we'll have an ambassador there, and they'll throw us out in the end. But at least we'll go out exposing them in front of the whole world and attacking them. PMN writes, now should USA leave? Absolutely. If the United States left and stopped funding the UN, it would be a tremendous blow to that organization, a tremendous blow to those who want to destroy national sovereignty. It would be wonderful if the United States left the UN. Absolutely. And threw the UN out of New York. It would be wonderful. PMN now writes, Torah and Talmud views of it. The Torah and Talmud view is that the world eventually is going to unite under a leader called Gog. That you're going to have Gog and Magog. And Gog and Magog are going to lead a campaign to destroy Israel. They're all going to, the world is going to unite, and they're going to lead a campaign to rebel against God, rebel against everything righteous, and to destroy Israel. And the UN could very well be the tool for that. That could very well be the tool that's used eventually to effectuate that. Thank you, PMN. And we go now to Hiram, who writes, and I quote, Shalom, what are your views on Mohammed's epilepsy? I know there are people who say that he had epilepsy. I don't know what he had. I don't know what he had. Maybe he had epilepsy, or maybe he was just maybe he just made it all up. That's also possible. Look, the guy was a mass murderer. The guy was a serial rapist. He was a pedophile. He was everything evil. Maybe he made these things up just to justify his evil behavior. Or maybe he really hallucinated and really believed in these things. Maybe he was psychotic. I don't know what his story was. I don't know if he was making it up, or if he was psychotic, or if he had epilepsy, or if it was all of the above. I don't know what he had. I do know that his religion is insane, and his followers are insane. And what he wrote in the Quran, and what you see in the Hadith, these are the writings of deranged minds, of demented people. Hiram now writes, Mike Huckabee's candidacy. I love Mike Huckabee because he is very pro-Israel, but he has no chance of getting elected president. All he's doing is taking votes away from Ted Cruz and splitting the evangelical vote, and that really bothers me. I'm sorry to see him in that position. In 2012, we wanted him to run last time. Last time, he had a real chance of winning. Last time, the polls showed him in first place. He was leading in the polls nationally and leading in the polls in Iowa. Last time, he was ahead. Now, he's like in fifth or sixth place, and now he picks to run when he doesn't have a chance. Last time, he could have actually won. He should have run in 2012. We urged him to run, but then he said no, he doesn't want to run. Now he's decided to run now when he doesn't have a chance. Now the only thing he can do is harm Ted Cruz. I don't agree with his positions on other issues. I think his positions on some of... He raised taxes when he was governor of Arkansas. Anyone who knows me knows that I favor drastically cutting taxes, if not eliminating the income tax completely. And I know he says he wants to eliminate the income tax federally. Okay, that's very nice. It's very good. I agree with him on that. But when he was governor of Arkansas, he raised taxes and he just justified it again. They asked him about it. He said, well, the people wanted to improve the terrible roads in Arkansas. He raised people's taxes. He drastically increased spending in Arkansas. I don't agree with that. So there are a lot of things that he did on other issues that I don't agree with. But on Israel, he definitely takes good positions. And so it hurts me to see him running and splitting the truly pro-Israel evangelical vote with Ted Cruz. Hiram now writes, and the concept of animal sacrifice at Beit HaMikdash. The concept of animal sacrifice, that I could do hours and hours on that. Animal sacrifice, one of the aspects of animal sacrifice was that it was in place of human sacrifice. In other words, the sinner sees the animal being sacrificed, whether it's a cow or a lamb or whatever, whatever animal was going to be sacrificed on the altar. And he realizes that he's the one who should be killed because he committed a sin. He did something very wrong, and he's the one who actually deserves to be killed, but because of God's mercy, he's not being killed, but he's seeing this sacrifice, so it creates the full consciousness of the severity of his sin, of his rebellion against God. That was one of the reasons for the animal sacrifices, to show people, this should have been you. And you're seeing this now so that you'll know this should have been you. But you're not being killed. You're being given another chance. So don't sin anymore. Be righteous and be upright and be just and be kind and be truthful and be honest. And follow the commandments of God. That was one reason. Also, the sinner, a second reason, the sinner is giving up something of great value, because it's expensive to give up a lamb or sheep or a cow, very expensive, or a bull. I mean, these are expensive animals, especially in ancient times. And he's giving up something of great value to show that he wants to make things right, he wants to make amends and make things right with God. And so that was the second reason, that he's willing to give up something of great value to show that he really regrets having committed the sin. In addition to that, there's a third reason. Everyone else was sacrificing to all these other gods. And so this is the Rambam, Harambam, Maimonides says this. This is controversial, though. There's a machloket, there's a disagreement with others in Chazal on this, but Chazal meaning the great rabbinic sages. But Harambam says everybody else was sacrificing. This was every single civilization, every country, they were all having animal sacrifices to their gods. And so the only way you could get the Jews to worship God would be to say, okay, when you want to eat meat, if you want to have a steak, or if you want to have hamburgers, or if you want to have meat, then you can do it, but do it as part of a sacrifice. You'll also be feeding other people. You're doing it as part of a sacrifice. And you're doing it to repent for the wrong that you've done. You're going to the Holy Temple and you're repenting for the wrong you've done. As long as you're going to eat the meat anyway, you go there, you're going to sacrifice, and you're going to repent. Because this was the accepted custom everywhere in the world for every religion. The difference between the Jewish sacrifices and the others were that the Jews were sacrificing to the real God and were doing what God actually commanded them to do, and the other nations were sacrificing to the false gods. And that is the difference. That is the difference. God allows human beings to sometimes to set the parameters of how to worship him. Sometimes he allows human beings to do that, because of his mercy and because he wants us to be partners with him. We were created in his image. So sometimes he allows that to happen. That's a third reason. I hope this isn't too complex. And a fourth aspect of animal sacrifice, there were great prophetic experiences at the Holy Temple. You couldn't have people going to the Holy Temple if they're traveling long distances and going to the Holy Temple in ancient times. Ancient times, they had to travel for days. You couldn't have that unless they were going there and we're going to eat and we're going to... And you just couldn't do it. And we're going to have this religious experience there. They had great prophetic experiences at the temple, at Beit HaMikdash. At Beit HaMikdash, there were great religious experiences. There was the Shekhinah, God's presence. And Nevuah, prophecy, existed when the temple stood. Can you imagine living in a world, just imagine this, where you have no doubt that God exists, where you clearly see God's manifestation? God himself you can't see. God is not physical, he's all spiritual. So there's nothing to see, it's all spiritual. But imagine seeing the manifestation of God, whether it's clouds or it's fire coming down from heaven or some other manifestation of God. Imagine if you actually saw this and there was not the slightest doubt in your mind that every word of God is true, every word of the Torah is true. Can you imagine what an uplifting experience that would be, what a thrill that would be? The Jews at Beit HaMikdash actually did experience that. They actually saw those things and they experienced those things, and they experienced a joy and a commitment to faith that was beyond anything we could understand. So that was another aspect of the sacrifices. I hope that answers your question to a certain degree, and I barely touched the surface. It's a long, long subject. Thank you, Hiram. We go now to Tzelhar, who writes, and I quote, "Is Huckabee being financed and encouraged to run for president as a divide-and-conquer strategy by entrenched establishment GOP, unquote? I don't think the establishment GOP is doing it, but I do think the news media is doing that. I think the news media knows that he takes votes away from Ted Cruz and takes votes away from the one candidate that really can win as an evangelical, which is Ted Cruz. I think the media knows that, and I think they deliberately promote him for that reason, the left-wing media. So I think the news media is doing that. And the establishment, the Republican establishment, may help him out, may try to help him out in order to do that, especially if they think Ted Cruz is going to gain momentum. They may try to do that. Thank you, Tzelhar. We go now to Nekama, who writes, and I quote, "One, please debunk the term Arab Jew," unquote. Well, that's a very insulting term. Sephardic Jews or Mizrahi Jews do not want to be called Arab Jews. And the reason they don't want to be called Arab Jews is because the Arabs are a people that are committed to the destruction of Israel, and the Jews don't want to be associated with that. The Jews who are self-respecting don't want to be associated with a nation, the Arab nation, that has sworn to destroy the Jewish people for over 100 years now. They don't want to be part of that. There are self-hating Sephardic Jews who do call themselves Arab Jews. You have that phenomenon now, left-wing self-hating Sephardic Jews, but they're a small minority. Most Sephardic Jews, if you call them an Arab Jew, will be very offended. Very offended. And that's good. Nekama now writes, too, "Please comment on Anjem Chudari, Anjem Chudari. Anjem Chudari is the Pakistani Muslim in Britain who is always preaching violence and jihad, and they don't arrest him. They let him get away with it. I'm banned, by the way, from setting foot in Britain. Not that I care. I would never want to go there anyway. But I'm banned from going to Britain. I got a notice from the British Foreign Secretary's office. They sent me a notice saying I'm banned. The Foreign Minister of Britain and Foreign Secretary, they told me you cannot come, and they gave me a long explanation of it. It doesn't bother me. I never intended to go anyway. But Anjem Chudrai, who calls for the destruction of Britain and calls for Sharia law in Britain and says we're going to conquer you and destroy you, he's all over the television there. He's allowed to do anything he wants. Nekama now writes, 3, is Allah Hashem, unquote. Okay, now this is controversial because our Christian friends don't like when we say this, and some people don't like when we say this. But the Harambam, Maimonides, says that Allah just means God in Arabic. And that even though Islam completely lies and distorts what God's intentions are, when they speak of one monotheistic God, one ruler of the universe, that's the same concept as the Jewish concept. Now, of course, they lie about what God stands for. The Quran is a lie. The Hadith is a lie. Islam is a lie. Everything they say is a lie. Everything's a distortion, a lie, twisting, everything. But when they speak about one universal monotheistic God, that's God. They're distorting, and they're distorting what he stands for, but it is God. That's the view of Harambam, of Maimonides. Thank you, Nekama. We go now to EB22, who writes, and I quote, "If Ted Cruz becomes president, which damages that Barack Hussein Obama caused do you believe he can reverse? Which damages Barack Hussein Obama caused are irreversible," unquote. Great question. And you know, EB, you read my mind, because that's my opening was about this, was actually about this subject, about where America's going and the grim prognosis for the future of America. In my opinion, he could, if the American people would back him up, he could reverse everything. But the American people are not going to let him do that, unfortunately. At the very least, if Ted Cruz were elected, he could secure the border. He could begin a program of more aggressive deportation of illegals. He could make employing of illegal aliens, crack down on employers of illegal aliens, and that could discourage further illegal immigration substantially. and could encourage maybe a lot of the illegal aliens who are here to go home. So there are things he could do that could reverse the demographic damage that Obama is responsible for. There are many policies he could pursue. And just on a spiritual level, if Ted Cruz were president and he was really supporting Israel and he took care of the Iranian nuclear program, imagine how God will bless Israel if America goes in and destroys Iran's nuclear program, if you have a president like Ted Cruz who is more pro-Israel than Netanyahu. Can you imagine? God may find ways to bless America and to reverse the damage Obama did, if that happens. So I think Cruz would give the country hope again. I think he's the one candidate that could give America hope again. Thank you, EB. And we go now to Gimatria, who writes, and I quote, Chaim Ha'amitz, your thoughts on Lion Calandra. Is there an uglier woman in all of journalism? Are her readers destined for Gehenom? Unquote. Lion Calandra is... I don't even know what she does now, but I know that she was a columnist, a big columnist for the New York Daily News. And she wrote a column attacking me personally and attacking JTF in 2006. She wrote a big column, the whole column, just a whole article, big article, blasting us and attacking us. She certainly is the ugliest, she's one of the ugliest women in journalism, although she has a lot of competition. And are all of her readers destined for Gehinnom? That I don't know, because you may have people who read her who don't agree with her and just read her for whatever reason. So I don't know if all of her readers are destined for Gehinnom, but she certainly is. Thank you, Gimatria. And we go now to Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, "Why do animals suffer?" Unquote. I don't know the answer to that. I don't think we do know the answer. I mean, we're not animals. We're human beings. So I don't think it's hard for us to put ourselves in the place of an animal. I mean, how can a human being possibly understand the feelings of a cow or the feelings of a pig or the feelings of an alligator or the feelings of a walrus or a snake or an insect? How can a human being understand that? We don't know what we don't know. How they cope with things, or what their lives are like, or how much they understand. We have no idea. We know they understand much less than we do. We know they don't have free will and they act according to their instincts. That we know. Animals act instinctively. But we don't really understand actually the whole nature of how everything works with animals. So I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, and I don't know if there's any reward for animals who suffer. Yes, that's a question that actually did come up in the Gemara. There is actually a question of what happens with animals and when they die and so on and so forth. I think the majority opinion is that they just die, but you know. I honestly don't know the answer. I do know that we're not allowed to cause them unnecessary suffering. Unnecessary suffering, we're not allowed to cause them. We're supposed to be kind to animals. They are God's creatures, and we should be kind to them. Thank you, Tag Mechir. And I want to thank everybody for another program that I very much enjoy doing, at least. Until next week, Shalom.